Hello, this is Werewolf the Podcast, and this is your werewolf speaking. We're on episode 151. We should have celebrated 150, apparently. Yay! But we didn't, so there you go. There's loads of links in the description. If you're on Spotify, could you please go rate us, and could you give us some feedback? I need some feedback today, and that is whether or not this is the correct amount of sound effects. I've sort of halved what I would normally do, and I know that some of you are being a little bit vexed by them, so thank you for that feedback. If you could give me that, that would be great. And of course, you're all great, so carry on listening to this nonsense we call a podcast. To be or not to be, that is my constant vexation. This is what I was born for. This is what I'm here for. This won't be revenge, because the price I've paid is too high even for that. Anything I can take would be like no recompense for what has been taken. But this will be all I can do to destroy those that have destroyed me and the ones I love. The plan isn't complicated. My mindset at the moment, well, it couldn't be complicated. I'm going to go in and I'm going to kill, or whatever it is you do to dead things, everything and anything that gets in my way. I like those type of plans. I won't have a team to get in the way. No need to be concerned for the safety of others. Not like I'm ever concerned. That's good. There will be no friendly fur accidents when I cannot accidentally kill them. I sit naked in the back of the transit van. There's no seats, just the wheel arch mould to perch on. I shiver from the cold, but that's good. I need to feel something other than the emotions flowing through me. Fenn sits on the opposite side. If you don't know him yet, then okay, he's my gigantic, invisible, ghost-like wolf soul friend. When we do the transformation thing, he shares my body. It's magic. Yeah, just take it as magic. His mind is quiet and he stares at me as the suspension creaks. We move with the vehicular's motion, which is weird. He's not affected by physical movement and can't be touched, so why is he moving with the van? I feel his concern and I love him for it. Like me, he is built, ready, and now prepared for war. War against everything else. Everything else is going to be. We're hurt. We will hurt back. And we're good at it. A smile briefly. I mean, I don't have many skill sets, but like hurting and violence are at the top of that shortlist. Ben, Sula and Simon are in the front cab. I'm glad for the solid bulkhead partition between us. I don't need humans near me now. I know it's not their fault that, you know, they're just cursed with being such, but I just don't need to be near them. I think the professor chose his vehicle specifically so we could sort of, I don't know, prepare on our own, or maybe he wanted to separate an angry werewolf from his precious human detectives. Whatever the reasoning, he's right. Ben and Sula, obviously I have to explain, are detectives dealing with the cryptid crime world. And the professor is a Leicester University supernatural crime expert and, as such, linked to the government to support them when a supernatural crime expert is needed. And he's also my friend. I never thought that beyond Fenn I would have a friend. It never come up before, but with this man there was some link in the understanding of our lives. We kind of get each other. I don't think that has happened with someone before. The problem will be that one of us will have to go at some point in the near future. You know what that means. You don't. Okay. I will have to kill him so he does not kill me. The MOD tech nerds have tackled me with and fully teched me to the top, and as a result I'm fucking bored to death. I've got this harness on which I'm told will expand and contract with my transformations. It has body cameras on it and all that kind of shit, so I can transmit my night's work to the Watchers. I've been given some kind of weird fucking stick on earpiece that is incredibly uncomfortable. Apparently that will allow me to take orders. And it will stay in my ear with my transformations too. Yeah, fucking sure it will. Fenn smiles as I reach up and rip it from my head. Fuck 'em, he says. The straps and the bands holding it make it a little difficult to extract, but now torn and broken, I throw it in the corner. They can watch, but they can't tell me what to do, so this removal simplifies that for me. I'm not ignoring orders without the headset, I'm just not getting orders. Mostly, I admit, I'm not getting orders, so I don't have to ignore them. I've been told about another 100 things or so that the vest does and has. GPS and stuff for drones to follow and things. GPS so they can help me if I'm trapped or taken. It's not for the military to know where I am for a massive strike of ordnance if it's, you know, something that's needed and apparent. I must admit, I switched off from the lies of the explanation a few words in. I don't mind the camera though. I love a good snuff film, and this would be a groundbreaking piece in that particular genre. I could use this footage for an art, I don't know, explorative thing. I kind of have it in mind once this is done. What could it be called? The vivisection of the vamps. Sounds good, yeah? The vehicle finally slows, pulls up, and I feel it slowly turn before it reverses up a slight incline. My blood starts to pump as the requisite hormones are dumped in huge amounts in my veins. I start to smile. Fenn starts to smile. We hold each other's eye contact for a while. No words said, no words needed. We're ready. The wait has been torture, but the professor has not been wrong yet. So for now, I must almost trust him. But I'm always ready to be wrong. But that is for future Will and Fenn to worry about. The engine cuts out and I hear the conversation in the front. Ben and Sula are considerately told that they might want to stay in the cab until I have left. I know Simon does not think I would hurt them, but that is his guess, I suppose. And my behaviour is, let's say, not always rational. I think he just wants to talk to me, in private before we go. Footsteps move around the van and I hear him bang a hand on the side panel in the so-called secret code that he set, so I know that it's him. It's fucking funny, really. I know him so well now that I can sense him from about a mile away, but I accept his foibles. He's pretty cool. The doors open and the van's internal light brings the man's smile into view.
Okay, we're here. I don't have much more to say to you, my friend, really. You know what you need to do, and I know you can do it. I would say have fun, but in this case it's about something other than fun.
He said in a very severe, un-Simon-like manner. He noticed the bundle of wires thrown in the corner and laughed.
I thought not,
he smiled. Only then did I notice he had a steel armour-plated right arm from wrist to shoulder, a gauntlet, a van brace, a coster, a pauldron, and obviously a gorget to protect his neck. He noticed me looking and became a little embarrassed, which would, I suppose, under other circumstances, have made me smile, but it seemed appropriate.
I'm going utterly old school myself tonight. Been a while since I swung a sword in actual combat, but I think it'll be the most fun way to do the deed. A good hack and a slash makes a man feel like a man, if you know what I mean. These youngsters here just don't get the fact that you haven't really killed a thing properly and with respect, unless you see its eyes go dull as it dies.
I must admit, I smiled at his words. Although I didn't need his weapons, I understood the feeling behind what he was saying. I liked watching life leave wretched creatures, the wretched creatures I kill. There was a definite kinship between this man and me. We had subtle differences. People like Simon as he sort of... Well, people like him because he's, you know, he's kind of portrayed as the knight, as a good fellow, while actually inside there's a monster. He did it exceptionally well, and I don't think people realised what he's truly capable of. I was the same being. Except my monster was also obvious on the outside. No one liked me. And I couldn't give a fuck. I liked it.
Now, whenever you're ready, go do your thing. Obviously, I can't stay in touch now.
He laughed and nodded at the earpiece.
But I will be in a few minutes after you. Try not to get killed, and more importantly, try not to get me killed, will you? It's bloody annoying when it happens, and it also usually hurts.
He opened both doors wide, and I slowly stepped out of the back of the van, my bare feet padding onto the roadway surface, feeling the dampness of the rain that had fallen earlier. The air outside the van smelled and felt wonderful against my skin. I could already pick out the creatures around me by sound and sense and aroma. I could almost feel where the soldiers were concealed. I could sense their heart rates, and the sweat that was beading on their skin just gave off stench. I could feel the living and the dead in the house. People did not move without a heartbeat, but some of those in there certainly did. Shock! A white cat shoots across the road on a hunt of its own. It snared my interest for a moment. A fellow predator on his own quest tonight. This felt real. I could see the house. I could see the door. I could see the two figures standing outside the door. Anger started to build in me. The little part of my mind that was rage grew. Fenn's rage joined mine. We were becoming all consumed by it. A simple snarl rose in the back of my throat. A quiet snarl, but a significant one. The blood started pumping in me. It rose, as did the fur on my now wolf-shaped body. Fenn was part of me, and we were going to kill. We were ready to kill. I wanted to transmit my rage to the world. I wanted to roar and announce myself and tell those blood-sucking fuckers that I was on my way. But as usual, shh came from my cooler-headed counterpart sitting with me inside my skull. The professor... Well, he was now forgotten, as was everything else, except that doorway, which came into ultra focus. And then I went.
The professor. The man became wolf and exploded from the back of the van. He was many paces away before I could get him back in my field of vision. Goodness, he could shift. I banged on the side of the van to my two compatriots to let them know that he'd gone. But the horror had started in the house way before they even got out of the vehicle. A high-pitched scream ended in a gurgle and a crash as another man's "Aah!" never quite made it to the gosh, he was quick at this. There'd probably be nothing much left for me to do by the time I got there. Well, that's not a bad thing on balance. An almighty crash now as the wolf went through the front door. Where the door had once been visible, a ragged hole was, and the room he entered started to light up and boom with the racket of gunshots and the usual sounds of modern warfare. By the time Ben and Sula arrived at the back of the van, I'd found my little picnic basket and laid a blanket over the back of our temporary seating in the van's back doorway. I opened the hamper and started rooting in it for the items I'd prepared earlier. They stood there watching me as I did this. I could feel their discomfort as they held their silence while being completely on tenterhooks.
Oh, sorry.
I apologised as I found the cheddar and discarded it for now.
He's in,
I told them, turning and smiling at their worried faces.
Would you like some cheese and crackers? I've got a lovely Wensleydale in here somewhere,
I said as I went back to my search. The two of them were way too tense to talk or even to sit down. I could see there was no way I was going to get them to relax. I found my Wensleydale and placed it on my plate with a small pat of salted butter and a peppered crackers I love the most. I do love a peppered cracker, especially with Wensleydale and salted butter. Sitting with a satisfied sigh, looking down the road at the house, I took out a flask of bourbon from my pocket and had a swallow. At times like this, a more rough-and-ready spirit helps me prepare better than a smooth malt, and it actually went very well with the creamy texture of the cheese. I made a mental note of this combination for future reference. Pre-battle, Wensleydale and bourbon. Watching the two detectives as they looked between me and the house was interesting. They were totally... what do you young people say? That's it. Mind blown, as the sound of gunfire and the screams of Will's victims rang out into the night, alongside the crunching of my utterly delicious cheese and crackers. A small explosion happened somewhere in the house. A couple of windows blew out, and they both ducked and flinched away, even though there was no chance anything could hit them from this distance. Amazing. Was I ever like this? I don't think so. Maybe some of us are just born for this kind of life. With the lip of the flask caressing my mouth and the warm bourbon trickling its way down the back of my throat, I suddenly remembered. I'd better actually tell the powers that be that we'd started this mission. Damn, I thought. I'd forget my own bloody head if it wasn't screwed on.
Cleanse is underway. The wolf has made contact,
I said into the little comm unit on my collar, spitting a few crumbs over the small black box as I did so. I'm not a big fan of modern tech, I must admit, but it can be helpful. I mean, just imagine if we'd had this type of communication system back when we took to the battlefield with my household knights. We'd have been unstoppable. Drones flew into the airspace around the house and hundreds of armed bodies appeared out of cover. I was a little stunned. I'd actually had a quick pee on one of the walking bushes a minute or so before and it had said nothing. They moved to cover all the angles around the building, which frankly wouldn't help, but it made the bigwigs happy. Getting back to my picnic, I took another cracker and another slice of that lovely Wensleydale. It was delicious and not to be ruined by pickle. I would leave my cranberry pickle for the cheddar. Ben and Sula were both looking at the house. I could sense their fear and horror at what they were seeing as I concentrated on masticating my little treat.
I'd give him another few minutes myself. Let's say he's got a few issues to work out with those inside,
I told them through a partial mouthful. They turned and gave me the same nod each. You could tell they worked very closely together.
Can I get you anything?
I asked, pointing at the basket. I reached in and threw a can of Coke that I'd purchased for him to Ben.
This is for you. I know you drink this stuff. And here's an elderflower sparkle from Waitrose for you, Sula,
I said, passing the bottle to Sula.
I had to guess at that one, I'm afraid. I know you love your coffee, but we don't have time for the stove,
I told her, looking at my watch.
That's very nice stuff,
I said with a smile. They nodded their appreciation, but they were too caught up in the happenings at the end of the street to actually open the drinks. I sat back and crossed my legs, appreciating the scrummy cheese interspersed with the frequent bite of the burning spirit.
Oh, Sula, I've been meaning to ask you, how's your sister? She's pregnant, is she not?
I asked the woman. She turned and nodded before quickly turning her head back to the house. She was too focused on it to speak.
Marvellous, marvellous. Babies are marvellous, an absolute miracle,
I said as I finished my mouthful and sipped the bourbon once more.
Is it her first?
I asked the detective, but she either didn't hear me or she couldn't, so I didn't push the conversation any further. The noise and kerfuffle in the building had dropped off and become almost quiet.
Ah, that sounds like my cue,
I said. After picking up a final mouthful of the cheese, I closed the basket and reached into the van for the tools of my trade. There lay a heater shield that was almost bulletproof and built to my precise requirements. The boffins had messed around with it so that it would not only stop blades but catch them as they struck. It hadn't yet been tested in combat, only in the light sparring play of training. It felt slightly light on my arm compared to the oak kite shields I used in my day, but it was an utterly splendid thing. I admired the De Montfort coat of arms beautifully presented upon it, a white lion rampant on a red field. Pride. Yes, I felt pride. I had a selection of weapons to choose from for tonight's work, but I went with my old classic combination. An ancient battered warhammer was slipped into the leather loop of the belt at my waist. It had seen some action throughout its lifetime, and it felt like a comfortable friend in my hand. I placed a poignard on my other hip, and then the pièce de résistance, my beautifully made arming sword. I liked mine a hand and a half, just in case my shield got smashed and I had to relinquish it, but it was beautifully made and balanced. It was a modern version of my older blade that was now retired and sat above the mantelpiece at home. I smiled at the burnished bright steel while with my teeth I pulled the leather glove off my left hand so I could run my thumb down the weapon's edge. The sword was so sharp I didn't even feel the cut. But I saw the blood flow. It was utterly perfect. I was so absorbed in all of this that it was only now I realized the two detectives had been watching this display and were quite perplexed. I turned towards them, towards two open mouths of disbelief, as I replaced the glove on my hand.
What? He's going in like that, boss?
Ben asked. Sula looked slightly disgusted, folding her arms and frowned. I nodded.
Yup,
I said as I swung the sword a little, enjoying its heft and the dexterity it would have applied to it.
What if they have firearms, sir?
Sula asked. I shrugged and smiled. I didn't have an honest answer. I mean, she was effectively correct.
I just feel it should be done this way today,
I told her.
I mean, it's not very likely that we're going to succeed anyway, so I'd like to fight under my own colours and with a real weapon in my hand today,
I told her, swishing the blade back and forth a few times.
It just feels right,
I smiled. She nodded her approval. I knew she didn't fully understand, but she respected me enough to accept my decision. I started whistling as I made sure all was ready, checking all the details of my armor and arms. I think Ben wanted to make conversation to comfort himself more than I.
What's the tune then? Is that like Bach or Beethoven?
Ben asked, knowing my love for the finer things, to which I smirked.
It's Disney's Robin Hood,
I replied.
Brilliant film,
looking them both in the eyes, grateful for their concern. They both laughed and felt a little relief in the humour of the moment. I squeezed each of them on the shoulder and smiled.
Remember what to do if this goes all tits up, won't you, please?
Yes, sir,
they both said.
Get as far away from me as fucking possible.
They sang out together. My response was laughter. I lifted the point of my sword to them.
Perfect. Now wish me luck,
I said as I turned to wander down the road to the house, whistling my jolly tune. Tally-ho and all that.
Will, I began to run down the damp road. I was now ultra-focused on what was ahead of me. I was excited, I wanted blood. 300 yards only took mere seconds in this wolf-shaped body. And the two people that stood there did not see me before I was on them. It was laughable how ridiculously shit they were at defending this place. The two of them standing on either side of the door, no weapons in hand, just standing all fucking glamorous and vampire-y, all cool with arms crossed and shades. Well, that changed when I fucking arrived. A few yards from them, I leapt and transformed the mid-leap. A clawed, paw-like hand caught each one of their heads simultaneously, and having them both in my grasp, I went through the door and through the wall that door was in. Their bodies were smashed into the doorframe and walls on either side of the door. Now, hole now, I don't know. I must have been moving fast as I felt their heads pop like uncooked eggs against the walls as I dragged my arms through those walls and the doorframe, empty but bloody. The impact had slowed my forward momentum somewhat, but I shook myself free of bricks and wood. I was in a long corridor leading to stairs and rooms off to either side. Time slowed for me now. This was what I was born for. Screaming and running were going on around me. If something was screaming and running, they weren't an immediate threat. Immediate threats came towards you, or just fucking hid and shot. A couple of young men wandered out of the door on the left. They were dressed in 17th fucking century foppery and looked more like Anne Rice vampires than, well, fucking Anne Rice vampires. They were an immediate threat, sort of, if I could have taken their fucking appearance seriously. But if they kill me, them looking like that, I'd never fucking forgive myself. One raised a fencing foil in a salute, of course he did, and managed to gain guard before, well, I didn't salute, I was fucking on him. He was super quick and the thin sword pierced my shoulder, but that didn't matter as he had his head in my hands. His face showed a lack of belief and fear before I pushed his beautiful blue eyes into his skull with my thumbs. Ah! I lifted the now screaming fop as he struggled to try and remove my paws from his little face. Oh, he was quite strong. His feet kicked at me in his little satin shoes until clear liquid and brain matter squirted from the orbits of his little skull. I held him there until he stopped wiggling. When he was... is he dead or, I don't know, undead? I ripped that skull apart before dropping the remnants on the floor. This is what I live for. The other Anne Ricer lifted a flintlock pistol of some kind and sighted down the barrel at me. I dropped the corpse and turned to him, raising my arm to cover my eyes as he fired. I didn't want to be shot in the eye. That really fucking stings. I heard the bang of the pistol and the impact of the shot as it peppered my pelt on my chest. The smell of singed hair came to my nostrils as I looked down to see a small area where the bastard had shot and burnt my beautiful, glorious hide. I quickly ran my hand down back and forth over the spot, shaking loose the little hot pellets before turning back to the gentleman who had fired the gun. He stood still, frozen in stance, looking at me with shock. I think he must have thought that the ancient weapon should have killed me. I smacked the gun out of his raised hand, and then slashed him once with my left clawed paw, and then again with the right. His abdomen burst like a balloon full of offal, and he sank to his well-tailored knees, his guts slowly emptying onto the floor. He knelt before me as I lowered my face to look into those crystal blue eyes. I was going to let him unlive and come back to kill him later. Let him feel the pain and the agony of his injuries. It was foolish of me, but the more pain he felt, the better I would like it. he would start to heal, and then I would hurt him again and again if I could. I raked a clawed foot through the pile of plaited snakes on the floor to see his face flinch. Beautiful. Suddenly remembering the foil that was in my shoulder, I pulled it slowly from my body, yelling my rage at the pain of its removal. In the past, I would have just snapped it off at the handle, but that made things not work properly, like muscles if you had metal stuck through them, so I took my time to remove it. Two Matrix wannabes had just arrived from the room on the right. One of them drew a pair of Glock 19 pistols, and the other, oh, fuck, of course, oh, fuck, a pair of katanas. It's always either a fucking samurai ninja matrix bastard or Anne Rice fucking dandy, isn't it? When do we reach the next level in vampirosity and meet the sort of Nosferatu ugly looking monster bastards? Come on, what happened to those days? Who fights effectively with two guns or two katanas? No one is the answer, so I knew they would be a shit contest. The Glocks, if fired, would be so powerful they would be lucky to hit the fucking wall behind me with the kickbacks. These vampires were fucking idiots. I noticed a shitty knockoff bust of the Greek classical Apollo. It was in arm's reach. It hurt my aesthetic senses, so before the pistol man had raised his guns, I spun slinging the ancient head with all the force that I could muster at him. The head hit the vampire square in the chest with a satisfying crunch and sent him flailing back into the hallway from where he'd just come. These fucks were quick, but they were quick when compared to humans, not me. I was so much faster than they were. I'd not crushed his skull or took it off or anything, so I'd have to finish him later, but that would be when Sword Girl was full of her own fucking swords. I would make an example of her and turn her into a, I don't know, a dual katana kebab for, well, for no reason at all, to be honest. She did some complicated but very aesthetic and balletic twirl as she raised her blades to strike at my throat. Well, I was faster and did nothing fancy but change level and lead with my head and jaws to her soft belly. I took her in the midriff wholly. I then stood and started ripping at her, shaking my head while she screamed her protestations. I bit through the muscle and the gristle to her spine and felt it crunch and break as blood ran down my front and other juices. I wrenched at her a couple of more times. I spat the two parts of her on the floor now. It was amusing to see how she landed her face down in her own crotch. Blood and bits poured all over the situation like some inviting meal for a werewolf. The smell of that blood was orgasmic. I suppose it would be like the finest chef-made gravy to the foodiest foodies' noses. The torso turned itself over and snarled. Impressive. It shouldn't really be able to do that shit. She looked at me with eyes of hate, not fear. She was great, so I decided to be kind and, well, kill her quick. The coup de grace was a simple couple of stamps to the forehead which crushed her skull and left a somewhat sticky puddle on what appeared to be a very fine example of an Afghan rug. A specialist cleaning company would be needed to get that stain out, although I would buy it now for a lot more than it was worth with that sort of beautiful artistic rendition. The kneeling vamp behind me started to burble as he began to heal. Oh, the joy of being able to go back to him, and I smiled as I bent down and re-raked his guts from his healing body, scooping them out as though he was the animal taken at the end of the hunt. He fell to his side as blood geezered from his mouth. He wouldn't die yet, though. Oh, no, he would heal again. He would die when I was fucking ready. His head would come off when I was fucking ready. The running and the shouting had stopped as I wandered back into the hallway and more shots rang out. Two people, vamps, whatever, were on the balcony in cover at the top of the stairs. I come back for these hiding cowards, but let's make sure the rooms down here are empty first. If these two shooty types were sensible, they would stay in cover and not follow me, obviously. That would be the only possible way to get through this assault of mine. Fucking weak hiding. I checked the rooms, two empty. In one, something was behind one of the sofas. It was breathing fast and scared, and it was human, it was female. I kicked the wooden frame piece of furniture it hid behind so hard that it took the body of the unfortunately found hide and seeker with it. The crunch of wood and bone made me smile as it smashed into the wall. These old buildings have nice solid walls. Imagine if that had been modern drywall. She probably would have survived. She had not. I sensed the death. Oh, I didn't see it. Then I was out across the hall once again. More shittily aimed shots rang out, but I was faster than the two future victims. Let me sense what they were. Ugh. Boring. They were living men with guns on the balcony. They had no chance to hit me as I hit the door to the a kitchen, which was now empty as well. This was somewhat disappointing. The back door of the building was open and I could hear gunfire outside. They'd fled straight into the oncoming soldiers. That was good. They'd run and some would escape and tell the others that we were coming, which is what I wanted. The night was going well. Right, back to finish the dying that are trapped here with me. I would torture them with extreme prejudice if I was allowed. Ben and Sula. Sula sat next to Ben on the back of the van. She was rocking a little to comfort herself. The professor had gone into the building a few moments ago. With this job, I keep expecting someone to step out of the bushes and say something like, "Surprise! Prank TV," or something like that, Sula said. Honestly, sometimes I wonder if I've gone mad. Ben laughed as he finished his can and crushed it before throwing it over his shoulder into the back of the van. Sula gave him a very disapproving look at his behaviour, so he retrieved it. "I'm sorry," he said as he showed her the can and sat back down beside her. "Yeah, I know what you mean. You don't see half of it though, do you? The wolf soul thing that follows homeboy is fucking terrifying." He smiled and shivered visibly. "Do you ever want to stop then? Have you ever considered transferring to another department?" he asked her. She rocked back and forth again as she thought. "Have you?" she asked him. They smiled and laughed. "Nah," they both said at the same time, laughing.
The professor. As I got to the house, I was impressed by the devastation the werewolf had caused. The front of the building was an utter wreck, which would be a hefty repair bill for the new buyers. The begonias had fared well, though, which was nice. Where once stood a door, there was now merely a hole in the brickwork that had obviously been created by his entry. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. He really was the equivalent of a furry tank. Two complicated streaks ran down the damaged walls, leading to two red viscous puddles on either side of the newly reworked doorway. I was sure that under investigation they would be the remains of someone or something that had got in his way, but at this moment it was difficult to tell. They really were little more than a pair of gelatinous smears in the brickwork. "Hello?" I shouted into the building, staying well out of the sightline of the doorway. The last thing I wanted was to have my head blown off for presenting it to be shot at. "Anyone in here still? Anyone existing in here?" There was no reply, but there was much groaning. And plenty of last breaths being taken, though. I prepared myself by tightening the straps of the shield on my forearm before raising it to cover as much of my body as possible. I closed my hand around the hilt of my sword. Oh, the feeling was utterly incredible. The hairs rose on the back of my neck. This was how war should be fought. Face to face, blade to blade, mano a mano, and tooth to claw. As I carefully walked in, waiting for an attack of some sort, I noticed an injured man crawling across the floor, his guts being left behind as he slithered on his belly. When he saw me, he started speaking in some language I didn't know. I was fairly sure of his sentiment, though. He didn't want me to go anywhere near him. So I separated his skull from his neck with a simple slash of my blade. By God, it was sharp. It severed the neck and spine without any resistance at all. I smiled at this beautiful thing in my hand. "Will?" I yelled. The man and Wolfsoul walked into the hall. He was splattered with blood, and his eyes still held that thousand-mile stare that he had in the van only a few minutes ago.
"You okay, Will?"
I asked.
"No injuries?"
I inquired. He shook his head, smiling through bloody teeth. Will was human, but he looked utterly wolfine right now. I saw his true nature there and then, and I thought to myself, we may have to put this one down when we finished here. That would be a shame. But could we let something like him exist? Was it my mission to protect him or destroy him? His smile froze as soldiers slowly entered the room behind me.
"Next,"
he whispered.